Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Today, we'll be talking about enhancing sensitive communication in our daily interactions with others during these very challenging times. My guests are Caitlin Stecker. She's a licensed clinical social worker, a psychotherapist in private practice in Astoria, and a trainer of the Healing Method Internal Family Systems, also known as IFS. And we also have Caitlin's dear friend of decades and respected peer, Jerry Rousseau from Glendale, Wisconsin. Jerry's a licensed clinical social worker with over 52 years of clinical training and experience in the field of humanistic psychotherapy. He's also an emeritus clinical associate professor with the UW-Milwaukee Helen Bader School of Social Welfare, Social Work Program. Good morning, Caitlin. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning.
All right.
Welcome everybody from Milwaukee.
Yes.
Yep.
I like everyone I've ever met from Wisconsin. It's just a lovely, lovely person. So before we begin, let's have the listening audience learn a little bit about each of you. So Caitlin, many people are familiar with you in Astoria, but for those who aren't, please tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I think what I'll say right now is that I'm living the best part of my life. And it has a lot to do with being able to be with people in such intimate process and support people in their lives as they go through passages, especially as it has to do with loss and grief. I feel very privileged and honored to be able to be with, especially the people in this community of Astoria and North Oregon coast. And as well, I get to be, we just graduated a class yesterday, it's really a long-term training that happens. And I get to be with people from all over the world that are eager to learn and apply the healing method of IFS and to go out and to help with the kind of trauma and hurt and pain we have in our countries and in the world right now. And so I just feel like I'm having an opportunity. I just talked to one of my co-trainers this morning, and they're talking about having us go to different countries in Europe that are asking for IFS to come and be part of their healing process in their countries. So I'm just living the best part of my life right now in so many ways.
That is a feat in today's world for sure. And Jerry, please tell the listening audience about yourself.
Well, a core principle in my life is to attend to the challenges and the conflicts that are just part of the human experience as opportunities to grow. And in that regard, I feel blessed and very fortunate that I have a great life partner, my wife, Dagmar Plank, who is a fiber artist who brings a whole artistic view into the world. And we're also blessed living with our cat named Lumi.
A four-legged companion is a marvelous thing.
Right. The other thing, Donna, that I enjoy is a good sense of humor. Life can be pretty challenging at time, and when you bring a dose of appropriate humor in, it just seems to make things go better.
Yes, levity. We need that today. Well, before we kind of jump into everything, what is it that made the two of you talk together and think about choosing this topic, enhancing sensitive communication in our daily interactions with others during these very challenging times we're living in?
Well, from my perspective, the cultivation of meaningful relationships is at the heart and soul of the human experience. And this is an eternal conundrum for us. And I've been increasingly concerned about how we talk with each other about sensitive cultural issues that enhance relationships without shaming and criticizing one another.
That is, yes, Caitlin.
Well, I just was going to say, I think we ended up thinking about this because Jerry and I have for 44 years now. Actually, you know what, Jer? It's next week is our 44th anniversary of meeting on the steps of the graduate school that we began together. And over that time, Jerry and I have had thousands and thousands of conversations. And in those, as it happens with people who are important to you, we've had little dust ups and little challenges to our connection and communication. And I believe that we have one of the most blessed relationships to practice this idea of being able to be with one another through love and keeping our hearts open, and also being able to talk about things that you often don't get to talk about with people because they are so sensitive and people stay away sometimes. So I feel like Jerry and I appreciate this topic and live this topic more than anybody I know.
I don't think it gets any better when you have a friend like you, Caitlin, and we can go into differences, we can have hot spots, and we know, we have confidence that we're always going to be able to come out of these on the other side, even closer and feeling more intimately connected with each other.
Absolutely.
Because of the work you do, I am wondering how over the years you have seen our culture change so that things feel more highly charged today, and words are being used as weapons, and people are fixated on particular opinions. How are you all negotiating that with the people you work with?
Well, I'd like to start off with that, Caitlin, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And we're in the midst of significant and long overdue changes in becoming more aware of and sensitive to how we communicate with each other about issues that have had a long-standing history of bigotry, sexism, racism, discrimination, homophobia, and all the related issues. In turn, these changes have led us individually to significant challenges in how we speak to other people who may not possess the same level of awareness and sensitivity that we deem most appropriate. Also, when people confront us with our sensitivity, I think it's really important to learn how to respond in ways that enhance the connection with the other person.
We're getting triggered more easily in a way. And so what you're saying is self-awareness about our own communication, that when something feels like a trigger, that we are able to maybe step back from the conversation and begin it again in a different way?
Well, I don't know about begin it again, but I do think also we really need to recognize and have some compassion for ourselves in this time, Jerris, that you're describing, because I don't know that we would be as divided as we are if we didn't have the kind of media and information systems that we have. Because when people, we were just talking about this idea of, in the 60s, when that huge change happened culturally, we didn't have the same level of everybody knowing about every difficulty that was going on. We certainly did know about the big ones, but now it's like we're now being cued to this because, unfortunately, fear and distress sells TV and radio and all the other communication information centers, because people want to know what's going on as a way of trying to stay safe in it all. But it's not necessarily, I don't know that I buy that we're necessarily all that more divided. I actually just think it's that we just think we are because of the picture that's being painted in our lives. And then also, we are having conversations about really difficult, as you said, Jer, long-term issues culturally. And of course, there's going to be people with all kinds of different responses to it, and especially developmentally and age-wise. And there's, I just was with a very wise 80-year-old woman who said, no matter how hard I try, I'm never going to have the kind of flexibility and understanding of some of the issues of today, because most of my life was spent in a whole different world. And though I can be sensitive to it, I'm not going to be able to have what I experience with certainly the 20 and 30 year olds that I interact with, where there's a lot of things that us older folks can get kind of worked up about that they're just comfortable with now because it's what they grew up with. And so anyway, that's my little diatribe on that.
Self-awareness that you mentioned, Donna, I think is a critical skill that we need to develop. There's been such an acceleration of communication with electronic social media that we get caught up in that. And I think self-awareness, what's happening inside of me, what kind of emotions, what kind of feelings am I experiencing when I communicate with other people? Self-awareness can help us slow that down and pick up what's going on inside of us. So these internal reactions are not going to get played out in divisive ways with other people.
Yes, Caitlin.
Yeah, I'm just thinking as you say that, Jer, you know, in these trainings that we do, they can be over a year period or various lengths of time. And every day of the training in our method, we ask people to think about doing the U-turn, as we call it. That if something's upsetting us from outside, a person, a situation, an event, that we do the U-turn and come back and connect in with ourselves about what does this mean to me? What's happening? What's the risk? What's the threat? And to be curious about our own response, like you say, Jared, the self-awareness. The problem is that even in these trainings of people who've been a therapist for 30 years, it's kind of revolutionary for them to think about living in that kind of way, because our brain is actually wired, if we know it now, that when there's distress, we look for what we can blame or who we can blame. And if you actually see an MRI of the brain in someone who is in that kind of state, they feel better when they can find what they can blame their experience on. And so the compelling energy to blaming and accusing and condemning is powerful. And we're going to have to evolve as humans to a place where we can be aware of that. And that's what in these trainings we're trying to work with people with. But we're actually kind of shocked at times how people say, I've never lived that way. I've never lived by looking at what my own response is.
I believe that curiosity, you mentioned curiosity, Caitlin. Mm-hmm. I believe curiosity is incredibly important. And in some ways, it's kind of a lost art because people are so caught up in wanting to make a point or a counterpoint to one another. Curiosity is really kind of like a balm. It really helps us show interest in another person. To do that, we have to be able to step aside from making our point, even though we have, as you would say, Caitlin, parts in us that want to respond. We need to step aside and develop that sense of curiosity and show interest in what the other person is saying so we can more clearly understand them.
Absolutely.
Many spiritual teachers have said that if we begin to become agitated during a conversation, we are attached to our opinion about something. It's our ego. It has nothing to do with who we are. And even Eric Hoffer, the long German philosopher in his book, The True Believer, talks about the fact that if we are wedded to one belief system and cannot even comprehend or understand that there are many belief systems out there, then we are creating divisiveness in a way. So this is an interesting conversation since we are seeing so much divisiveness in our culture today, which is, as you mentioned earlier, Caitlin, an indication that some change is happening and change will always be happening. It just appears to be happening in some ways that are uncomfortable and happening so rapidly.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really, I think at this point as well, rapidly, but again, I just want to say we're being bathed in it. And so it's really difficult with that level of arousal happening in our life. But also, I have to say, I don't know so much about attached to an opinion, but I do think that one of the ways that we help ourselves feel safer and okay is to feel that we're right. And that actually in the work that I do is considered a protector that takes care of us by trying to prove we're right, make sure we're right, that we live in the right way. Now that means right according to how the person defines that. So someone can be, an anarchist of some type, and they're living out their belief that they are right, and they're living by that ideal that they have of that rightness and righteousness. And so I think it is also a response to me. Part of it is I do think we have more trauma. It's not just that we're talking about it, but that we actually do, that we are having more trauma of a cultural sense as well as personal, and that therefore we have shame that we're carrying. And then when someone judges us, that shame is activated, and then we have to do something to deal with that shame and prove our worth or prove again our right. And so I just want to read this Wordsworth sentence. If we could read the secret history of our enemies, we should find in each man's life sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility.
Oh, that's beautiful.
The old notion, you can't judge a book by the cover, I think is very appropriate with that quote that you used. We interact with people, even people we know quite well, but we're not really knowing what's going on beneath the surface. Everybody is prone to having the widest range of human experiences. We don't know what challenges they're going through. We don't know what trauma or pain they're carrying. And I think it's important to realize that people are very complicated. We're imperfect. We have a lot going on within us. And when we encounter somebody else that might, on the surface, we might have some reactivity to, Caitlin, you and I have talked about how looking at the other person as a potential teacher to take us right into the learning that we need to know in order to take that next step in our own development.
Absolutely. We call that in the work tormentor, TOR-mentor.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns, and today we're having a discussion about sensitive communication, our interactions with others, and during these challenging times. My guests are Caitlin Stucker. She's a licensed clinical social worker, psychotherapist in private practice in Astoria, and she's a trainer of the healing method, internal family systems, known as IFS. We also have Caitlin's dear friend of decades and respected peer, Jerry Rousseau from Glendale, Wisconsin. Jerry is a licensed clinical social worker. He has over 52 years of clinical training and experience in the field of humanistic psychotherapy. He's also an emeritus clinical associate professor with the UW-Milwaukee Helen Bader School of Social Welfare Social Work Program. Let's continue this conversation. Maybe we aren't attached to opinions then. Maybe we just need to feel that we're right in order to feel that our lives have meaning and that we are on the track we're supposed to be on. Everything is called into question, it seems.
Well, my colleague in the work, Michael Elkin, says that with recent studies, they find that people are actually more frightened of being morally judged than they are of death. That the fear of moral judgment, of having people see you as wrong and bad, is a fear that drives much of our behavior. And again, it's all an opinion about what's the moral rightness or the moral wrongness, whatever. That's a floating, moving target. But the idea of being judged and found unworthy is a huge driving of much of the behaviors that we see in people. What do you think, Jer?
I think that's a good point, Caitlin. And along with that, I think that the challenge, if we want to really connect with other people in a more intimate, meaningful way, it's important to find ways for ourselves to be vulnerable. And that's a challenge because most of us are afraid that if we reveal ourselves, if we make ourselves vulnerable, that we are going to be judged. We are going to be criticized for that. So I think it's critical that we find ways to become aware of that aspect of ourselves that is afraid of being judged and find some effective ways to quiet that down so we can increase our vulnerability a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And you offer some tools for us when we feel we're being triggered or activated in a sensitive conversation.
Well, I think one of them is the first thing, of course, is to notice when I'm being activated, when I'm preparing my defense with other people. And what I've learned how to do in conversation is to just focus on my breath. And you'd be surprised, just focusing on one's breath for two or three breaths can really slow that internal trigger down to the point that I can respond. Now, if I'm getting quite activated, what I have done is I've said, I need just a minute here. I really want to take in what you're telling me, and I need just to slow myself down here so that I'm more able to really be a good witness and take in what you're telling me.
Yeah, that's great. And then I would say also just what we talked about earlier about, you know, what kind of conversation is this? Is it somebody who really matters to us that we want long-term connection with? Is it important enough to open up and be vulnerable?
I know on my part, I've over the last number of years, I have taken the time to reach out to total strangers that I might encounter at a checkout in a store or the mailman when he comes around. I don't have a friendship with him, but when I see him, I always like to greet him, thank him for the service he's providing. So my area of exploration with all of this is within my particular sphere of influence.
Yes, and perhaps there are conversations then that we should not have, that if we're in a situation where there's a political or a religious or a social, cultural topic that seems fraught with difficulties, should we just back away from that?
I think we need to just be very, like Jerry was saying, curious about our motives, about, you know, what's driving us to that conversation. So again, is it that we want to prove we're right? Do we want to, you know, have someone that is irritating us in some ways be limited or put down? What's causing us to want to have the conversation?
When I was growing up in Ashland, up in the northern reaches of the state, my mother suffered from schizophrenia. And one of the ways that I tried to protect myself from just being overwhelmed with what it was like to live with a mother who was severely impaired was to try to cultivate perfection. And perfection is a sure way to shut down any ability to be vulnerable because you're afraid somebody's going to find out the truth about you. So I've really focused on allowing myself to be more imperfect, which allows me to step into some of those incredibly challenging situations and pace myself in responding and speaking to other people.
We just have a few minutes left, and I want to give each of you an opportunity to say some things that perhaps we haven't talked about. We could talk for a much longer time about this. But what are some things you would like the listening audience to know that maybe we haven't touched on, or some tools that you'd like to leave them?
Well, I'd like to comment that I think it's really helpful. And President Obama, when he was in office, he even spoke about this. He said, remember that we are all imperfect human beings, in essence, trying to do the best we can. So I think that's a tenet that really is incredibly important to keep in mind.
And I would have to say also, to be able to have compassion for ourselves, that if we've been hurt, and who hasn't, we're going to have reactions to experiences that we have where we're defensive, where it's hard for us, again, to keep our heart open because we have hurts that continue to influence us. And so, you know, of course, I'm very much a proponent of people having the experience of practicing and being with other people where you can feel compassion and connection and support and healing sometimes in those settings. But even just being with people who you can feel are able to see you clearly and warmly can be a balm, as Jerry was saying, to our experience enough that maybe the next person that we interact with, we're able to give that to them. And so the more we're feeling tended and connected, and we're creating that in our life, the more that we can bring that kind of kindness and care and love to other people. So go ahead, Jer.
My wife is a retired social worker and a very accomplished fiber artist. And I've really learned the metaphor of mending clothing can be applied to human relationships. Caitlin, we've talked about doing a repair. You can always go back and you can say, I want to come back to something and apologize because I really spoke out of emotion rather than listening.
Any last thing? We have 1 minute left.
Well, I just want to encourage people to give some consideration that life can be an incredibly exciting adventure when we look at every interaction we have with another person as an opportunity to grow ourselves.
Yes. What if everything that happens is a call to us to be more present and more able to actually experience our life fully and not miss those moments, and that the irritations and the sadness and the difficulties are times we really are very aware, and if we can welcome those and work with them, they can be our openings to times of great joy and pleasure and connection.
Thank you both so much, Jerry, Caitlin. Really appreciate this conversation, so necessary at this time in our lives. And I appreciate you making time for that.
Thank you,
Donna.
Thank you so much. And Talk of Our Towns airs each the first Wednesday of each month. And thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Nevada, for being the engineer behind all of this, making it possible for us today. And also my gratitude to local talented banjo instructor Michael Brun for his original theme music for this program. Until next month, well, actually every day, let's try to remember, as Jerry talked about, taking a very deep breath. Let's just find a second to do that right now. Breath can bring us home to peace. And then focus on the things that you're grateful for all the good things in our lives, and give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being you, for doing the best you can on the amazing planet we call Earth.